Welcome to PostView.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the NFL Players Association conference call with Scott Fujita and Dominic Foxworth. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. If at any time during the conference you need to reach an operator, please press star 0. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Tuesday, January 11, 2011. I would now like to turn the conference over to your NFLPA Assistant Executive Director of External Affairs, Mr. George Atala. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for taking the time to dial in. This is in a series of conference calls we're having with player reps and members of our executive committee, really as a way to hear your questions. We're doing it as a virtual open locker room, if you will. Today marks 50 days to go until a lockout. We've talked a little bit about the sense of urgency that players have. Again, with 50 days left, there's a real sense of urgency on the player side to get something done. I also want to lead the conference call with some fantastic news about so far the 2010 playoffs being the most watched ever. An average of 32.3 million viewers watched each playoff game this weekend. So on behalf of the players, thanks for the fans for making this so successful, such a successful season, both in viewership and revenues and really every way possible. I guess there are two themes really we want to cover today. One, some highlights on the success of the game that we'll talk about a little bit and respond to and questions that you may have, and also on health and safety issues. Foxworth and Fujita both respectively were placed on injured reserve this year and are undergoing recovery and rehab, and I know they're both anxious to get back on the field next year, and the players and what they're trying to do is ensure that that happens. So with that, really, moderator, we'll open it up to questions and see what's burning on people's minds. And I know there's a lot of media members on the call, so we'll take as many questions as we get.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to register a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you'd like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. Once again, to register a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. One moment, please, for the first question. Our first question comes from Chris Fritz from Politico. Please proceed.
Hey, George, thanks for having the call. It's Chris Fritz of Politico. Had a question for the players, wondering kind of what they think, Capitol Hill could do for the players as you guys approach the lockout and, if they have any plans to be up here lobbying members on the union's behalf.
Either one of you want to take it?
Yeah, fuck sure. Why don't you go ahead?
What's that? I didn't hear that last.
Go ahead, Fox.
Why don't you go ahead there?
Okay. Well, we've been up there a number of times, and I think the most important thing that can happen for us on Capitol Hill is just the level of the playing field, because as we found out recently, the NFL has been lobbying on Capitol Hill for a number of years now. So it's important that they see our faces, too, and they recognize that there's another team playing in this game. It's just I feel like their representation or their image of the NFL has only been the owners and management, whereas there are workers to us and the blue collar, I guess, is the best way to put it, kind of the people who get their hands dirty don't often get representation on Capitol Hill. So it's important in my mind, and I think in the mind of the Players Association, to make sure that they know that we exist, we have a voice, and everything that they say is best for the game. It may not be what's best for us, especially when it comes to health and safety.
Just to pick up where he left off, I agree with what he's saying. I think it's important for players to be involved in this process, and I think as much as sometimes fans want the Capitol to be out of this and kind of stay out of this business, I think it's important for them to be involved for a number of reasons. more so than anything else, I think, is that a lot of these cities will not be able to survive a lockout. And the city I play for right now, Cleveland, the team I played for the last 4 years, New Orleans, they're struggling. And to lose out on the money that would come in from the NFL season, it's going to be devastating. So from that standpoint, it is the government's business, and I think it is important for them to be involved. And like Fox said, the more players that can show up and show our faces, it's important for the big picture.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
Our next question comes from Ken Murray from the Baltimore Sun. Please proceed.
Hi. Thanks, guys. I'd ask this of both players, and it's on the safety issue. What I wonder is if defensive players in the league now consider themselves to be as protected as offensive players. Do you guys have the same protection with the rules?
I would say absolutely not. Just being a linebacker, on a game-by-game basis, there are a number of things where I think players can be more protected on the defensive side of the ball, especially defensive linemen. You know, for years now you've seen what's called a post-and-shot block, which is extremely dangerous. Offensive linemen cutting defensive linemen and linebackers in the back of their ankles, which is another thing that's illegal, but it kind of just flies under the radar, and the punishments aren't the same. Now, we don't want this to become an offense versus defense thing, but realistically, as a defensive player, no, we're not protected the same way. And I think if the league is going to continue to pretend like they care about the health and safety of the players, it should be more far-reaching than it is, and it should cover both sides of the ball.
Well, you got two defensive players on the call, so I think you already know that answer you're going to get from me. So I agree. I think just to throw on top of that is press back blocks at receivers, necessary to linebackers and safeties often. I've seen a number of concussions occur that way, and they're defenseless in the same way that a receiver is looking at a ball and jumping up and gets hit in the head. Our safeties are running down to the line of scrimmage and get blindsided also, and linebackers and get hit right in the side of the head and get knocked out and suffer just as many concussions and just as much damage as the quarterbacks and receivers will get blindsided too.
Thank you, guys.
Our next question comes from Mark Mask from the Washington Post. Please proceed.
For both of the players, another kind of health and safety question. What did both of you think, now that we've gotten through the regular season, what did you think of what the league did in terms of the legal hits, the fines that were handed out? Did you think the intent was right? Did you think the execution was right? And if you disagreed with it, what would you rather see done in place of that in terms of that attempt to get those kind of techniques out of the game?
Well, I think that it should be clear. And doing things in the middle of the season, I would imagine that they would say that you need to address the safety right away, which we all agree with. But the rules aren't clear and consistent. I could go through a number of game films and find things that were fine, things that weren't fine, that all look very similar. So I think the most important thing is to make sure that the rules are clear, hard and fast, something that we can all abide by, which it doesn't feel like it is. To me, at least, right now.
Yeah, I agree with Fox on that one. I think, making, kind of sweeping changes mid-season like that, I think can kind of raise some red flags. Something like that, obviously we care about the health and safety of all the players, but that's something I think that both sides need to sit down at the table and have a long, healthy discussion during the offseason and figure out the best way to move forward to take care of our guys. Realistically, when meetings started to take place mid-season, and looking at the films, like Fox said, and seeing some of the highlights of these hits, I guess lowlights, as you might call them, at the same time, and the NFL sent out a video for all teams to look at and kind of showing what are legal hits and what are illegal hits. And I got to be honest with you, the majority of our team walked out of that meeting more confused about what was legal and what was illegal than when they walked into the meeting. And to me, that's a problem. And it shows that time needs to be invested in this and it really needs to be looked at in the offseason.
Thank you. That's good. Thanks.
Our next question comes from Joseph Weber from the Washington Times. Please proceed.
Hi, guys. Thanks for doing this. Sorry about this, but another politics question. I just wanted to follow up a little bit. Do you think that perhaps with the Republicans controlling the House and or the persistent long-term unemployment rate now at 9.8%, such a concern about jobs that, that might create a new sort of heightened interest or sense of urgency on the Hill to maybe take things up? Because I know that you guys have been up there before, but yeah, it doesn't appear as if you've gotten that much of enthusiasm about maybe having any hearings.
Scott?
Yeah, but I mean, you're closer to the Hill than I am, and I haven't had a chance to really get up there at all.
Oh, no problem. I just felt like you kind of answered that question earlier. So
right.
I think you hit it on the head with the unemployment. Those are exactly what's happening is we will be losing more jobs and during a time when people can't afford to lose jobs. So we've been kind of beating the drum up there on the Hill about how important these games are to these cities and how important these teams are to these cities. And if you're going to lock people out, you need to have a really, really good reason, especially during this time. We've been banging that drum for over a year now. So I like to think that now that it's coming up, that people will listen and start to really look into what's going on and understand that this is going to not only cost people money, but it's going to cost the cities money and revenue produced by mass transit on the day of the games and revenue produced by the restaurants that surround the games, the bars and restaurants. Those restaurants oftentimes pay a ridiculous amount for rent so they can be close to the stadium and make a large percentage of their money for the year during those 8 home games or 10 home games, including the preseason ones. So if you take those away from your not only the people who work actually in the stadium, but the people who work in those bars and restaurants and the extra people that they employ for mass transit on game days, they won't have anything to do. It's just going to send our country, especially those major football cities, into a more tough situation than they're in now.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Our next question comes from Jared Griffin from the Cowboy Central. Please proceed.
Thank you very much, guys. I know we've been talking a lot about, you know, politics and things like that, but I want to ask more of a personal question. As both of you guys are veterans and both of you guys, you know, were injured this year, as veterans and specifically talking about, you know, if you really want to dig down to the deep part of the disagreement that you guys have between the owners, the one thing, a very specific thing, each of you or even both of you together that you absolutely will not budge on as the Players Association, what would that be?
Well, to me right now, as things currently stand, 18 games, the way it's being proposed, is completely unacceptable. Like you said, Fox and I are both injured this year. I see more and more players get injured every season. I see what happens to guys at the end of every season. I think this year we had something like 352 active players finish on injured reserve. That's a really, really high number. And the way the 18 games so far has been proposed, with no consideration for changing vesting requirements, with no consideration for players and post-career benefits, making sure our players are taken care of over the long haul. There are so many things now with player health and safety and the future welfare of us and our families that aren't even being considered. And for us, it's disappointing. It feels like a slap in the face. And for me at this point, as a 9-year vet, 31 years old, with a wife and 2 kids, that's something that needs to be looked at a lot more closely. And the way it's being proposed, like I said, at this point is unacceptable.
Yeah, I'd have to say health and safety, which is kind of hand-in-hand with what Scott was talking about. Health and safety is most important. And right now, after you retire, you get 5 years of health insurance, and then they're going to tack on 14 games. It just doesn't seem like enough as it is with 16 games because it's pretty tough to get insurance after you've played 9, 10, 6, 5, 15 years in the league. It's tough to find a health insurance provider that will take care of that for you. And we put our bodies on the line and produce a lot of revenue, and we get 5 years to protect those same bodies afterwards, and then they want to tack 2 more games on top of that, which is just going to multiply the injuries and the ailments that we're going to see as we go into our 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, if we're lucky. So it's just health and safety. We're not willing to budge on health and safety, and we'd like to gain some more ground on ways that we can protect former players and current players.
Really, you know, when you look at the 5 years post-career coverage, realistically, when I talk to players who retired, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11 years ago, a lot of those guys didn't really have any major issues in their first 5 years post-career. A lot of things started to come up 8, 9, 10 years post-career where you've got to get another knee operation, then you've got to get knee replacement, hip replacement. So those are the kind of things that cost a whole lot of money, as we all hear about all the time. And you know, the first 5 years post-career, that's not going to cover it all. And
right.
The immediate part of the health and safety, too, and just our health care coverage, This is a sensitive issue for me because we had a meeting to wrap things up for the season with our players a few weeks back, and I think we have, you know, five or six guys whose wives are expecting babies, I think, in March or April. A few of them, it's their first children. So I had a couple of their wives ask me if they should induce labor before the lockout just to make sure that they're covered. So, again, I talk all the time about the hypocrisy of the league and you know, pretending about how they care about our health and safety. Well, if you care about our health and safety, then please prove it to us.
Yeah. I don't want to continue to harp on this issue, but it, as you can tell, it's very important to us. But I did have a daughter about 5 weeks ago, so and they're going to cut off, or they're threatening at least to cut off our insurance when March hits. My wife is finishing up her law degree, so me, her, and my five-week-old daughter will be without insurance because of the threat by the league. While as you can see, I'm on IR right now, so I've given up my body to help advance this league, and I really just would like them to protect that same body. But sorry, let me go back to questions now.
Our next question comes from William Shackles from the Football Reporters Online. Please proceed.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks so much for doing this for us today. This is basically for all three of you. It's mostly health and safety, but also part politics. You know, we've been hearing over the last few years about all the injuries that take place, and obviously we just talked about what happens post 5 years after a career. Talking to a lot of the retired players, they talk about permanent back injury and traumatic head injury, and obviously you guys don't feel enough has been done. What have you guys done on your side to get studies together to prove to the NFL and the doctors that the NFL hires that this is just not the case and that you guys are not being protected to the best of the abilities?
Let me frame an answer and then I'll let you guys go. The NFL is the employer and the players are the employees.
Right.
And I'm not sure of too many businesses in America where the burden of responsibility to protect the employees lies with the employees. So in the business of the NFL, that construct should be no different. So I'll answer your question by framing it a little bit to give you a sense of where the perception is or how we approach this issue. So sorry to cut you off, but you go ahead and share your thoughts. Fox, are you going to say something?
Oh yeah, it doesn't seem like it's open for debate. I feel like it's maybe 2-3 years ago, people were unsure about the repercussions of playing professional football on your body. But it's pretty well studied and pretty clear that it's pretty bad for your brain and it's pretty bad for most other joints on your body. I didn't feel like it still needed to be proved. I could be wrong, though, but I'm sure that everybody on this call that keeps up with at least sports reporting has read a number of articles about former players who are now suffering from many different brain issues and back and knee issues.
And let me tie it back to, you know, we had a couple of questions about the Hill and why their involvement is important. Our Traumatic Brain Injury Committee, the Players Traumatic Brain Injury Committee, was formed, and we're doing some of our own research and studies on, you know, the health and safety of the players and things like that. But without a hearing by the Judiciary Committee back in, you know, I think it was October or November of 2009, how much of this awareness of concussions would have actually happened? So let me give you a little bit of 2010 by the numbers as it relates to injuries for everybody on the call. 352 active players went on IR at some point during the season. Of the 352 players, 3,278 games were missed. Just games were missed because of injuries. and the average was 9.5 games missed because of injury across the league. So those are the things that, you know, we look at every year and we've got to face, where injuries are part of the job.
I mean, that's about one-fifth of basically the total body of the league, 352 guys. That's
yep.
roughly one-fifth of players on IR. So it just doesn't paint – you can't paint the picture any clearer than that.
And if you need any more evidence about the issues related to concussions, we can send you a transcript of the House Judiciary Committee meeting from October 28th, 2009.
No, I don't. I just think you need I think the league needs to open their eyes to this a little more. I don't think they've done enough for it, and I think they're still too much in denial.
Yeah, no, I agree with you completely on that. I think for years, the league, you know, forever was denying that there was any kind of link between football and post-career head issues. I mean, come on, we all know the realities of this. For why they continue to deny that, I don't know. And like George said, with some of the things that happened on the Capitol last year, I think it was a huge step in the right direction. I think it was Maxine Waters from California, the congresswoman from out here, who said to the league, you guys sound like the cigarette companies back in the 80s. And that was the perfect analogy, I think, for the situation. Now the league, you know, for the first time is acknowledging that there might be a link and that this is an important issue. So, again, that's a huge step in the right direction. There has been progress made, but there's still a long, long way to go.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Howard Fendrich from the Associated Press. Please proceed.
Continuing on that line about health and safety, and you both touched a little bit on the 18-game regular season, I'm wondering if any of you can discuss what some of the specific things the NFL would need to agree to make that longer regular season acceptable to the players?
Well, I would think that's something that we should definitely negotiate with them. It's just, I guess in a general sense, we need consideration for the amount of hits that we will be taking, the amount of extra hits that we'll be taking, and just general kind of wear and tear on our bodies. And post-career insurance, I would think. And also, we also have to keep in consideration how long it takes players to get vested and how that would change, those sorts of things. The way we look at health care and health and safety would have to be completely overhauled, in my opinion.
I agree. Right now, like I said before, the 18-game discussion is not even worth having at this point because there's nothing on the table from their end that makes any one player consider playing 18 games. You know, we talk about the hits on the head, like Dominique just said. It's not just on Sundays now. We take hits to the head every single day in practice, twice a day during training camp, and that's one big part of it. It's just such a big issue that has to be looked at. 18 games, that's a lot to ask, and it's going to be tough for any player in this league to swallow.
And if I could just follow up with a more general question for the two players on the call, how – optimistic or pessimistic are you about the possibility of a deal getting done so that the 2011 season can be played?
Well, I kind of said half-jokingly to some of our local beat writers in Cleveland a few weeks back, right around Christmas, hey, it sounds like there's some optimism coming out of the commissioner's office. He thinks a deal could be reached before the Super Bowl. And at the time, I said that, I hope that Santa Claus would bring me every present I wanted under my tree this year, but that hasn't happened in 25 years, so we don't always get what we want. And unfortunately, that's just the harsh reality right now.
You have to agree. Hope for the best, prepare for the worst.
Our next question comes from the line of Doug Farrar from Yahoo Sports. Please proceed.
Thanks for the call and taking questions today, guys. This question is for George. George, can you give a little more detail on the timeline of the special master decision on lockout insurance, what specifically is being argued, and how that could affect CBA negotiations?
For those that are on the call that are not familiar with what Doug is talking about, there's a special master case right now going on over our belief that the networks negotiated the television contracts in order to gain leverage over the players in negotiations. That we are arguing before a special master goes against our contract. Doug, to answer your question as specifically as I can, given ongoing litigation, we expect the case, it was reported yesterday, we expect the case to come to a conclusion sometime later this week or early next week, and we expect a decision from the special master sometime before the Super Bowl. Those are in as many details as I can provide at this time.
In a general sense, though, I mean, can you comment on, and if you can, I understand, but can you comment on if the if that goes against the owners, or maybe I should ask a different question. Do the owners have some sort of war chest of TV money? Because this seems to be kind of a confusing issue in the case of a lockup, because that would obviously turn things more in their direction.
Well, put it this way. The deals that were cut, the television contracts, before this most recent fantastic one with ESPN to extend the Monday Night Football rights, they were done guaranteeing the owners revenue next year, even if there were no games played. So people can draw their own conclusions about what that means, and the league can talk about back-end credits for whatever that means. But clearly we're arguing that those contracts were made explicitly in an effort to gain leverage over the players.
Okay, thanks.
Or as we're, you know, as has been reported in some other places, those deals were done as lockout insurance.
Absolutely. Right. I mean, as I was going to say, it sure sounds like a war chest to me.
Yep.
Yeah, I wonder if, I don't want to have anyone overstep a legal issue, but Scott and Dominique, do you have comments about this?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last thing you said.
Scott and Dominique, you have comments about this because, I mean, these are people are watching you play, and this is where all the money is going, so, I mean, what are your thoughts?
My first thought was what George said. I mean, does it sound like lock insurance? Absolutely. Does it sound like a war chest to me? Absolutely. I mean, some of these major networks now who these deals are reached with, they basically are funding this lockout. And to me, that's disappointing because we're the guys in the locker room every single day who are doing the interviews with these guys for free, meeting with them on our free time away from families for free. All these things we're doing to help boost this game and to help our team and get our message out there. And they're the ones who are funding this lockout. That's disappointing.
I mean, look, Doug, think about, and for everybody on the call, I mean, I led off this call with, with the numbers from this year's wild card playoffs so far. I mean, when you've got 32 million people watching every single playoff game, and we're not even at the divisional level, much less the championship games or the Super Bowl, I mean, what's that tell you about the television contracts?
Right.
And what the future television contracts are going to be?
Our regular season games are blowing the World Series games out of the water. Now that says something about how big this game is in America.
Well, thanks, guys.
All right.
Our next question comes from Mike Cliff from the Denver Post. Please proceed.
Hey, Dominique. Congratulations on your new child there.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Good. About the rookie cap, I just want to clarify that are you guys, you know, you keep hearing that the veterans in the league are for a rookie cap, but I was thinking that maybe if Sam Bradford got his $60 million, that would have a trickle-down effect and help Peyton Manning. Is it that automatic that the veterans are maybe willing to give on that issue?
I personally have never been in favor of a rookie cap, just my opinion. It seems that this league, in general, you pay people in this league based on potential, which, I mean, when you become a free agent, they don't pay you for what you have done. They pay you for what they hope you're going to do. And that's the same thing in the NFL draft, I think, especially with these last several years of great young quarterbacks coming into the league. Sam Bradford deserves every red cent that he gets. He went to the worst team in the league and had a phenomenal year. And the same goes for Joe Flacco and Matt Ryan, and the list goes on for players that come into this league and produce right away. And I know
the counter-argument is that there are a number of busts, but the busts are far outweighed by the superstars, and you have a number of players who are late-round picks who turn out to outperform their contracts. I was one of those players, so I'm sympathetic to those guys, too. So if you're going to consider a rookie kind of controlling the salaries of the top rookies, then you should consider a way to improve the salaries of the third-round guys who end up starting 10 games at rookie year. Those sorts of things need to be considered.
Right, I'm a talk on that. You know, I think, you know, I'm a late-round pick as well. I had to come up the hard way, and I was one of those guys who was starting my rookie year and started from then on out. So, you know, one of the things that was proposed by the players here is a rookie performance plan. Now, the NFL, for whatever reason, said no. Now, to me, it makes a lot of sense. It seems like it would satisfy all parties involved. But the issue is that the money that's saved from the rookie money that's saved, should it go to vets? Absolutely. Should it go to retired players? Absolutely. Should it go to improving post-career medical? Absolutely. But the league didn't want to do any of that kind of stuff. And, again, that's kind of disheartening. But the reality is that it seems like the league is asking the union to bail them out because of some of their, you know, bad decisions and draft choices. That's not our responsibility. And we weren't the ones twisting their arms when they signed guys like Sam Bradford and Jamarcus Russell to those huge contracts. That's not our decision. That's theirs. And that's kind of the reality of it.
Yeah, I mean, they pay a lot of people a lot of money to scout. So the teams who keep ending up with busts might want to do a better job of selecting scouts and general managers.
Yeah, and then one other thing. Is it kind of a foregone conclusion that, you know, there's going to at least be a lockout on March 3rd? I'm trying to figure out which deadline matters the most. I guess the regular season, training camp, of all the deadlines, is it pretty well from the players' union point of view that you're likely to be locked out on March 3rd?
It certainly looks that way to me. And I think back to during training camp when the commissioner came around and he went by team and did his little PR tour, and he came and he addressed our team. And the first question I asked him is, I said, Mr. Commissioner, what is it going to take for us to get a deal done? And he said, listen, Scott, I don't think there's any sense of urgency right now. I don't think there's going to be one for a long time. He said, these kind of things have a way of working themselves out at the last minute. Now, why wait till the last minute? We've said that we want to sit down, we want to hammer this thing out and get a deal done in place to make sure that football's played next season. Why procrastinate any longer? My next question was, hey, we got a lot of guys on this team whose wives are pregnant. I addressed this earlier. And I said, their insurance is going to be pulled. And he said, well, then I'm sure you guys want to get a deal done right away, don't you? So that pretty much told me the story here. I think they're okay with letting this thing run for a while and trying to squeeze us into accepting, you know, really some deal that's unfavorable to the players, and it's just not fair. All the players want is what's fair.
Thanks, guys.
Our next question comes from Liz Mullen from the Sports Business Journal. Please proceed.
Hi, guys. I have a sort of a two-part question. The first part is that there's been some criticism of the players and the NFLPA that you guys should stop talking and sit down at the table and get a deal done. You know, that rhetoric isn't getting a deal done. And I want to know, how do you respond to that criticism? And then conversely, what do you think the owners should do if they really want to get a deal done?
Well, if I could answer the first part of your question, I think George, who's on the line right now, is actually the one who proposed a lock-in. And he's the one that said, why don't we lock ourselves in for a few weeks and really get this thing done, you know, kind of dedicate all our time to sitting down and hammering out a deal. George, I don't know if you want to expand on that at all, but...
Yeah, I mean, look, Liz, people on the call, if they're hearing it for the first time, let me just say that we're not the ones that opted out. So I think from our perspective, the owners opted out of the agreement, and we're, you know, the guys on the call in particular, because they want to come back and play after season-ending injuries. I mean, they just want to play. So let me reverse the question to you, Liz, and to everybody on the call. If people are so concerned about a lockout, and if the league really believes that a deal can get done, then just guarantee to the fans that there won't be a lockout. That's the question that I think should be asked by every member of the media, and the players have asked me. Why not just guarantee that there won't be a lockout?
Thank you.
next question comes from Jeff Shadell from the News Herald. Please proceed.
Hi, and thank you for taking my call, you guys. For the fans' standpoint, how will the league, you say, how will football be different once this is all resolved? In regarding, will there be a salary cap? How will the draft change? Scott, do you take that one first?
Yeah, Jeff. You say, say it again. How will football change? You're talking about the draft and salary cap.
Will there still be a salary cap? Because at one time, Gene Upshaw said once this is all over, there will never be a salary cap. Do you guys think there will there still be a salary cap? And how will the draft still be 7 rounds? How do you guys look at those two things?
I think we're still so far away from that. I think that's something that's going to continue to be discussed through collective bargaining. As I understand it, the draft this year will take place business as usual. In terms of the salary cap, I think in some respects the salary cap is healthy for the game. I think in many ways it is good for everybody involved. But again, Jeff, I think it's still so far away right now, and there's so much more in the meantime needs to be accomplished in a lot of hard discussions before we get to that point. So I'm afraid I don't have a better answer for you right now.
Right. I understand that the health and all that is your focus point. But how will – and if I could follow it up, how will how do you guys think the public will perceive the whole thing? Will they look at both sides as being stubborn, or what do you think will happen there?
Well, I mean, this is Dominique. I don't know exactly how it will be received, but hopefully they'll see it for what it is. It's a lockout. We're standing at the front door trying to get into work, and the door is locked. So it's I don't know how it'll be taken or how it'll be spun in the media and how people will receive it, but we are there ready to work as business as usual, and they're the ones telling us that we can't get in. So it seems pretty obvious to me.
Listen, obviously, Jeff. If there's a lockout, all of us are going to lose. You know, players, management, cities we play in, the fans, everyone's going to lose, and that's the bottom line.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jeff.
Our next question comes from Aaron Kurloff from Bloomberg News. Please proceed.
Hey, guys. Hi, George. Probably a question for George, so anyone else can jump in. I just wondered if you could update us on the actual status of negotiation. When were the last set of talks? When's the next set scheduled? And what's been discussed?
I don't have an update on any of those questions at this time. All I can tell you is that the clock has ticked 50 days left. So I wish I had better news for everybody, but that's what I've got.
And let me follow up with some of the players. What are you guys doing as union reps on your teams now? Like as the season ticks down to the close, what do you left? You have meetings with players where you explain this stuff to them. How does that all work?
Well, I think what Dominique said earlier was kind of the perfect way to say it. You hope for the best, but you prepare for the worst. I think all of us in our locker rooms, that's what we've been doing, trying to get our guys ready for what's ahead. I called a meeting with our guys a few weeks back, and I've been encouraging guys all season long, save your money, put your money away. This is what's coming. Get ready for it. There's a lot of uncertainty, a lot of gray area. We're kind of entering some uncharted waters here. So the best thing we can do is get our guys prepared. And I know in our locker room we are prepared.
Yeah, I think Scott nailed it. We're doing the same thing, and I have a lot of help from Chris Carr and Todd Heap and TJ Houshmandzadeh and Derek Mason, all guys who are heavily involved in the union. We've called a number of meetings and talked about options for buying insurance for our families and things like that, and preparing to save money, and even talked to guys who haven't yet gotten their degrees about using, if we're not going to be playing football during that time, you should use that time to further your education. Just don't sit around and do nothing and hope that the league will come back and open their doors to us.
Fantastic. Thanks, guys.
Yep.
Our next question comes from Stefania Bell from ESPN. Please proceed.
Hi, thanks guys for taking the call. My question, and just by point of information, I'm actually a physical therapist, so I'm really interested in the health and safety issues. And in a lockout situation, my understanding is that players on injured reserve are not allowed in the team facility. So I'm wondering if there's any discussion about what happens in that eventuality as far as your rehab, or are players just left to their own devices to figure that out?
You're talking about any event of a lockout? We're not going to be allowed in the building?
Right.
Right. Yes. No, that's an issue that's come up. We have a number of guys who had surgeries within about a week of the season ending. We had a number of guys who had surgeries throughout the season. A lot of guys who are going to need continued care and rehab. And I spoke to our head trainer about this about a week and a half ago. Come March 4th, he is no longer able to communicate with the players. He's been instructed not to communicate with us. So guys are on their own, and they have to pay for it themselves. And a lot of times that's going to go through the workers' comp process, which is a headache. But to answer your question, guys are going to be on their own.
And just to follow up, so you can't have a discussion in advance as to what the plan might be or recommendations of where to follow up. It's really completely, you're cut off.
That was one of the big things that I talked to some of our guys about, as well as our trainer, is, you know, before that March 3rd deadline, work with our trainer as much as possible, kind of formulate your plan so that when you do get out and you are on your own, you have something in place. You have a PT special somewhere you can go see, that you have your doctor, somewhere, outside Cleveland, obviously, that you can talk things over with. Because once there's radio silence March 4th, the guys have to have a plan in place.
I mean, look, Stephanie, a lockout is a lockout is a lockout. I mean, everything, you just get cut off. And there was a report I saw yesterday, even a lot of the coaches' contracts have lockout clauses in them. If you're on the call and it's the first time you're hearing this, it's obvious to the players that the league and the owners have been preparing for this for 3 years now. So, we've gotten to a point where, unfortunately, reality's starting to set in.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Dan Graziano from AOL Fanhouse. Please proceed.
Guys, I'm wondering, as nice as it might be to sit at a negotiating table and work all this out the old-fashioned way, are you starting to become convinced that something like the Special Masters case or something like Capitol Hill intervention is going to be necessary in order to resolve this dispute?
Well, I hope not, but I don't think we're definitely not closing off any possibilities at this point, but I like to think that we can handle this the old-fashioned, like you said. I wouldn't say that I'm convinced that Special Master case is the only way to handle it, or Capitol Hill intervention is the only alternative. I wouldn't say I'm convinced that we're at that point, but like I said, all options, I believe, are still open at this point.
Our next question comes from Tony Grassi from the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Please proceed.
Hi, I wonder could you guys just clarify something for me? When it comes to kind of like temporary health coverage in the event of a lockout, it was my understanding that it's perfectly allowable for the union to foot the bill for that. Is that true? And if it is, why won't the union just continue health care at its expense?
Hey, Tony, I think if I could just jump on that one real quick. Basically what's the option for COBRA is going to be available for the guys. Now, they just have to pay for it on their own. Should the union have to foot the bill for that? I don't think they should have to. They are not our employer. The injuries and stuff we've suffered were suffered doing our business as football players. I personally feel like our employer should cover that. I think most people I talk to feel the same way. Now, COBRA is an option. Again, it's extremely expensive. We ran the rates by our guys a couple weeks ago. They were shocked by it. For me personally, my wife and two kids, it's going to cost us about $2,000 a month. It's a lot of money. And for a lot of these young guys who are new in their careers, haven't earned a whole lot of money, and are expecting kids and have young families, those premiums add up. And if you're talking about a lockout that goes 2, 3, 4, maybe 10, 12 months, who knows how long it's going to go, that money accrued adds up to quite a bit.
And why let it get to that point? I mean, what kind of message is that sending? Why let it get to a point if there's a lockout? Well, who's the burden of healthcare going to be on? Why even ask that question? I mean,
well, wait a minute. In other businesses, the union would help out its membership in that case.
If you're suggesting that the union is not going to help out its members,
on that issue.
That's quite a mistake you're making, I think, in that statement, because I believe, we've got vested players that have the ability to use a Gene Upshaw Health reimbursement account to help pay for COBRA premiums. So it's not like we're your suggestion of the union leaving its members out to dry is quite mistaken. And again, why even go there? Why even get to a lockout situation where if these negotiations are about what's fair for, to use the owner's terms, what's fair for players, fans, and owners, why threaten a lockout and use leverage to get $1 billion back from the players? So if this is not a debate about healthcare coverage, this is a debate about whether or not an industry that is thriving can threaten to lock out the players and justify locking out the players based on or under thriving economic conditions.
George, could you just clarify, is it allowable for the union to foot the bill for the temporary health care?
It is allowable, yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Ken Murray from the Baltimore Sun. Please proceed.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you guys one more time about something you've already alluded to. But I wonder, and Scott talked about his own locker room, and Dominique talked about getting the vets involved, but I really wonder if you are convinced that the young guys, the first and second year guys in that locker room, are as committed to what you have to do as the guys who know what has to be done. You know, what is your level of confidence that the young guys are gonna be there and work with you?
Well, we're fortunate enough to have played team sports our entire life, so I don't think being dedicated to one another and unity and commitment and teamwork and these sorts of things are things that we're lacking in the union. If Ray Lewis, who has come on a number of times in favor of what we're doing at the union, tells our young guys that we need them to do this or do that, we all understand the hierarchy of a team. We understand how teams work. It will be very unlikely for any young guy, no matter what their experience level is, it will be very unlikely for them to go against the vets and what the vets say is right.
Our next question comes from Calvin Watkins from ESPN. Please proceed.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
I'm good. Have you guys talked a lot to the other players about their concerns about free agency? There's some players who might be unrestricted, who might be restricted. Has that been a major concern for a lot of the players that you've talked to?
It's definitely a concern. I would say, and I know we keep coming back to this, but most of the concern for most players is health and safety, those questions. And when they hear 18 games, the players get really, really upset and want to talk about that. It hasn't come up too often, at least in my dealings, but I imagine that it's going to be a concern for a number of people. It's going to change what you've kind of been working your whole life for to get to that first free agency period. It's going to be very different for a number of guys, which is very unfortunate.
And I ask you that because it might be over maybe 300 guys who could be unrestricted. Is that a concern that the owners might try to change the way the system is currently in terms of free agency?
So it doesn't just flood the market, you're asking?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like Dominique said, it is a concern for some guys. We have a number of guys on our team who were scheduled to become unrestricted free agents last year before the uncapped year. Now, obviously, they were tied down for another year. So is it a concern? Absolutely. But again, I don't think guys are taking their eye off the prize. Guys are too informed, they're too educated to let that influence anything. The most important thing right now, and all the guys in our locker room at least realize this, The most important thing is to make sure that we're taking care of player health and safety and that football is played next year. And we're going to do everything we can to make sure that happens.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Scott Petrak from the Chronicle Telegram. Please proceed.
Hey, guys. Hey, Scott, you touched on this a little bit when you met with the commissioner in training camp. But when do you think maybe both sides or the owner's side will start to feel a punch, like we have to start getting the deal done to really step up negotiations?
We felt that way for a while, honestly. I'd say the players have felt that way for a while, honestly.
Yeah, I agree with Fox there. I think it's complicated because sometimes you know, you get the sense that the owners really aren't all that unified in this whole thing. I think on one hand, the commissioner has kind of got some heat on him to get a deal done. I think he's going to feel that heat more and more, you know, from the fans especially. But I think there's a lot of people who are fine just letting this thing run down to at least the 11th hour and, again, try to squeeze the players into accepting a deal that's not fair to us. I mean, like a perfect example is Jerry Jones. And he said that a lockout would not be devastating for players, fans, communities, our support staff, everyone involved. For him to say something like that, to me, is one of the most irresponsible things I've heard through this whole process. But unfortunately, that's just where it's at.
When you say 11th hour, is that, you know, February? Is it July? You know, because there's a lot of moving parts with mini camps and camp and free agency. When do you think that drop dead date might be?
A lockout starts on March 3rd, full stop. I mean, for the players, a lockout starts on March 3rd. And, you know, for every fan in America, that's the date that the players have looked at as when the owners would effectuate a lockout. So, Fox, you said it earlier on. You're going to work. You cannot get into work.
Thanks, Ed.
Our next question comes from Doug Farrar from Yahoo Sports. Please proceed.
Yeah, me again. With kind of an out there hypothetical question. In kind of the offside of the replacement players, is there anything legal, antitrust, anything in a contract, anything anywhere that would prevent NFL players from forming an alternate league?
good question. I don't know.
No, I'm pretty sure well, that we would be.
Or kicking over the UFL or something like that.
I'm sorry, George. You can handle it.
No, I don't want. I mean, I think it's an interesting question. Well, look, once the contract expires, all bets are off. Once
yeah.
the CBA expires, so they're unemployed.
That's kind of what I was going to say. If there's a lockout, we don't have a place to go to work. Could the players start their own league? Yeah, absolutely, that could happen. Will it? I don't know. But, yeah, that's kind of a far-out there question.
yeah. I mean, we're unemployed at that point. We'll be looking for work anywhere. So if there's a league that's offering us a reasonable deal, it's not unreasonable that an unemployed man would take a job that offers him the ability to do to demonstrate the skills that he has.
Okay.
Maybe we'll coach and run around teams too.
That would be awesome. I want to be an owner of the Baltimore Ravens.
Mr. Atala, there are no further questions at this time.
Great. Thanks, everybody, for taking the time to dial in. We really, really appreciate it. And we are more than happy to take follow-up questions. Everybody knows, or if you don't know, I'll give my email address out to everybody on the phone. It's g@nflplayers.com. You can email me anytime with questions if you've got follow-up, other information you're looking for. So thanks very much, and Scott and Fox, stay on the phone for a sec, all right?
Yeah. All right.
Thanks, moderator. We can close it.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your lines. Have a great day, everybody.